1868 was a turbulent time for Spain. The country was struggling politically and economically, and just about everyone was taking it out on Queen Isabella II, who was doing a pretty good job of alienating even some of her staunchest supporters. Before the year was out, she would be forced to leave, and she would go to Paris to live out her days, years in fact, in a luxurious palace, which is now the location of an ultra luxurious hotel called the Hotel Peninsula. So we could say that she continued to live like a queen without the hassle of living as a queen. So that's what was going on there in Madrid. But up in the region of Cantabria, just outside the picturesque town of Santillana del Mar, I highly recommend you visit it one day if you haven't already. Life was quieter, as you would expect from such a bucolic and peaceful place. Despite the relative tranquility, though, who would have guessed that the first signs of yet another kind of revolution were about to appear? Yes, that was the year that a man named Modesto Cubillas was out hunting in an area called Altamira, and he came upon a small opening to a cave. Actually, it was his dog who had found it. It had been chasing after an animal, as dogs like to, and enthusiasm got the best of it, and the hound got stuck in the entrance. So when Modesto worked it free, he noticed a hole that led to a cave. Now, Modesto laid tiles for a profession. He was a tiler, and that was a pretty typical job back then. He was out hunting on his day off, I guess. And he lived on a property owned by a wealthy man named Marcelino Sanz de Saltuola. Modesto knew Sanz had a true passion for natural science and thought that he might be interested in knowing about the cave's existence, so he went to tell him. And he was right. Marcelino was very interested, and he liked to hear about it, but he didn't act immediately. He didn't really do anything, and there was a reason for that. And that's because Cantabria, let me tell you a little bit about the Spanish geography here. Cantabria is a region on the northern coast of Spain. It's essentially due north of Madrid, and it's tucked between the Basque Country to the east and Asturias to the west. The land in those parts is described as karst, which means there is a lot of underground water, and the geological makeup of the rocks and elements have a lot of different degrees of solubility, meaning that they erode at different rates. And what does that mean? Well, that means that the ground below can sort of look like Swiss cheese at times, and that there are caves and passages all over the place. Marcelino knew this, and that's why he didn't pay much attention to Modesto's discovery. He said, well, there are caves up there. Big deal. But I guess he must have gotten to thinking about it because in 1875, it's not next day, we're talking 7 years later, he took a look at the cave and he noticed some dark lines on the walls, but he didn't think they were anything made by humans and he didn't see much else, so he left. A few years later, he traveled to Paris for the expo there, and he saw an exhibit on prehistoric findings, things like tools, bones, and cave art. This was sort of becoming a popular science at the time. So once he saw the exhibition, he decided he'd give the cave and those lines another look. This time, he took his 8-year-old daughter Maria with him. She was eager for exploring. And in fact, this time, she was the one who went in. Her smaller size made it easier to reach different places and look around. And then suddenly, while she was in there, she shouted out what has now become a famous exclamation in the history of Spain, "Look, Dad, oxen," or bueyes in Spanish. At least that's what some people say. Others say that she said cattle or bulls, but that's not really important. The point is, she saw something, and lo and behold, there were painted animals there. They weren't oxen, they were actually bison. There are bison in Europe, they're called European bison, and this would have been an ancestor of that modern version. And they weren't the only animals, there were deer, horses, and mountain goats, and even human figures. Now, the most stunning section of this collection of cave paintings was on the ceiling of the cave, and it was known as the Great Hall. This ceiling was practically covered with paintings mainly of bison. They were the main subject there. The room proved so striking, so incredibly beautiful, so masterful in technique, that one French scholar would describe it as the Sistine Chapel of prehistoric art. And that would be at the beginning of the 20th century, several decades later. And the nickname has stuck ever since. But reaching that point, that recognition that it deserved, was not immediate. It took a while because not everyone at first was convinced by what they saw or heard about. Sands was, though, and he quickly realized that he and Maria had discovered, or what they had discovered, was nothing less than a prehistoric marvel. So he did some research, and he published an article describing what they had found, and he even correctly attributed it to the Paleolithic period. And he got the support of a professor in Madrid who agreed with his conclusions. But his claims were met with skepticism, especially by French experts who were considered to be the highest authorities on the subject at the time. Two of them, notably a man named Gabriel de Mortillier and Emile Cartelac, sorry about the pronunciation there, ridiculed the article at the 1880 Prehistoric Congress in Lisbon, Portugal. They simply did not believe that the paintings, or that paintings of that quality and in that condition, could be that old. They looked too new, they looked too modern in their style, it just was not possible. And they weren't alone in their suspicions. Many enthusiasts at the time questioned the authenticity of the works. They didn't fit in with their idea of primitive man, where an individual was not supposed to be devoting time to art, rather to other things, and they just were not capable. They felt that primitive man was not capable of producing anything of that quality. And it kind of made sense. No one had ever seen anything like it before. So how on earth could it be true? And on top of that, the incredible thing is that most of these people who were criticizing Sands hadn't even bothered to go and see the paintings for themselves. So for nearly 20 years, the findings at Altamira were all but ignored. During this time, in 1888, Marcelino passed away, no doubt frustrated by the negative response to his claims, and he would not live to see his discovery get the attention and recognition that it deserved. But that would eventually come, thanks to the Frenchman, Cartelac, the one who had originally called the paintings fake. In 1902, he did something unexpected, something a lot of competitive scholars back then wouldn't have dreamed of doing. He publicly admitted that he had made a huge mistake and was wrong all the time, and that the paintings, in his opinion, were bona fide works of early man. So that was good, and then he decided to go and see them for himself, finally. In any event, further investigations went on, but it wouldn't be until the second half of the 20th century that this amazing site would begin to attract international attention that other places like Lascaux in France received. And it was well deserved. So let's take a look at what makes Altamira the wonder that it is. First of all, we are talking about some of the oldest and most sophisticated paintings from that period. Dating has been sort of a headache for experts, but they seem to agree on a range of 13,000 to 35,000 years ago. Obviously, these paintings were not all done at the same time. This happened over a long period of time. So the quality and technique changed quite a bit. We're also talking about some of the most well-preserved examples of prehistoric art. The color depictions of the animals, mainly bison, are the main attraction. Artists and scholars throughout the decades have praised them for their complexity and sophistication and accuracy, physical accuracy. Experts have also learned more about the painting techniques used. The artists back then used hollowed out bird bones, and they would put paint inside and blow the paint on the walls, and then they would use their fingers to continue. And also techniques like diluting the paint to produce different tones. They would also mark out the outline of each image of each figure with the help of the cracks and the lines in the rock. They would also put their hands on the wall and then blow paint around it to give a negative image of the hands, which was quite advanced for that time. And probably the most captivating aspect is the use of the contours of the wall of the ceiling to produce volume and give it a kind of 3D effect. The curled up bison is a particularly amazing example of that technique. It fits perfectly on the bulge. It's incredible, incredible. In my humble opinion, it's a masterpiece of art and in the history of art. The entrance to the cave, which was much larger at the time, is thought to have collapsed around 12,000 years ago, sealing off the artwork from the outside world. This made it possible for the images to keep preserved for thousands of years. But once that barrier was removed, the painting's biggest enemies, carbon dioxide and water vapor, began to damage them. The caves were closed for the first time in 1977 and then reopened in 1982, mainly for experts, but also for a limited number of visitors, something like 8,000 a year. The waiting list would go on for months, so it wasn't easy to get in. But then deterioration continued, and in 2002, mold began to appear on some of the paintings, so they were closed to the public for a second time. And this time round, it was permanent. Now only a tiny number of people with authorization can access it. Similar caves like Lascaux in France have met similar fates, and the answer has been to build exact replicas right nearby for visitors to enjoy. They get a chance to experience almost the real thing without damaging the originals. And if you don't have a chance to get up to Cantabria, you can always visit Madrid's Archaeological Museum, M-A-N, MAN, where at the entrance, you don't even have to buy a ticket for this one, you can see a replica of the Great Ceiling. It's very cool. Anyway, along with France and Portugal, Spain is one of the world's epicenters of cave art. In fact, some say that the oldest example of human cave art in Europe can be found in the province of Cáceres in the west of Spain. It dates back to over 60,000 years ago. You can also find megaliths, monoliths, and dolmens all over the place. Just the other day, I was in a small town in the north of Madrid, and I was told that there was a dolmen in the area. And to my surprise, it was true. But not only was there a bona fide Neolithic tomb there, it was surrounded by a set of rocks, too. It was sort of like a mini Stonehenge, so it was amazing. So, we now know that primitive man, although after seeing their paintings from 20,000 years ago, I'm not sure if that's the right adjective, was very active in the Iberian Peninsula. Just how these people lived is somewhat of a mystery, probably always will be, as data is always relatively scant. Still, experts uncover new information all the time, so our knowledge regarding this period improves little by little. That said, we are now approaching the time when tribes and peoples from other parts of the world begin to arrive. They will begin to settle down and establish communities and villages and towns and even fortresses. And they will live and subsist and grow and develop until they begin to mingle with peoples from other parts of the Mediterranean. This era is known as the pre-Roman period in Spanish, and there's a lot to tell. So we'll get started on that in the next episode. Thanks for listening. Hope you have enjoyed this podcast on Spanish History 101 by Brian Spaindemain. Please feel free to send any questions or comments or suggestions that you might have. We'd love to hear them. Take care and be well, and hasta pronto.